When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We have no Phil, but we do have miracles.
Next on Eternal Dodos.
Hey, I just want to give a quick shout out to all of our Patreon supporters out there. Thank you to the Dirtle Maniacs. If you want to be a Dirtle Maniac, go to patreon.com/eternaldirtles and help support the channel. It keeps things going. It keeps things updated. Thanks so much for watching. On with the show.
Hello and welcome to Eternal Dirtles. I'm your host, Zach Clark, and with me this week, we have Miracles player, Winshawn. Win, how are you doing, man?
Good. How are you doing? Nice to see you.
I'm doing great, man. So you're here to talk. So you wrote a book about Miracles. You sent me this like 65 page report about Miracles. So you obviously have been playing a lot of Miracles.
Yes. I think Miracles is actually the mechanism that kind of got me into Magic.
So, oh, that's amazing.
Yeah. So I think I actually started playing Modern Miracles like a few years ago. I guess it's before the Modern Horizon 1. And back then, you know, you have opt to turn on the miracles. Basically, the mechanism of the miracle is so well designed. It's just absolutely amazing. It's so dramatic. It has everything I want about this particular game. And that's also what makes Magic so different from other strategy games. Because there can be a situation like this where the table is all flipped up and everything changed just because there's a miracle trigger.
So yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like getting to cast Terminus, or, you know, I think my favorite miracle trigger that's ever happened to me, there was a guy at my local who used to play just like red green monsters, like in standard, just like red and green, like Huntmaster of the Fells, you know, that sort of deck. And I was on a miracles list in standard, and I had to figure out a way to win where he was attacking me with like 10 guys. And I was like, there's just no way I'm going to be able to get past this. There's tons of mana out on the board. There's like 12 mana out. And I was like, okay, well, I'll tell you what. I've got an Azorius Charm. I'm going to cast Azorius Charm, draw a card.
Yeah.
Oh, it's Entreat the Angels. I'm looking at the board. I'm like, okay, so I can make four angels and have two mana left. Okay, well, I'll make four angels and have two mana left. And I'm still looking at the board. I'm like, well, that's still lethal. He'll still kill me. I had another Azorius Charm in play, so I gave all my angels lifelink, and and I saved the day that way. He threw his deck across the room.
I hate
this dumb mechanic.
either Terminus or Entreat are just extremely busted when, you know, when it's resolved in the right time. So it's fantastic. Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Tales of Adventure. Go to toamagic.com and use the code Dirtles for 5% off your order. You'll be directly supporting the show, and you'll get the entire order in one package. No more waiting for several packages. That's toamagic.com, code Dirtles for 5% off. So let's talk about your miracles list right now. How is it doing? And two, like, what's different about this miracles list?
Yeah. So how do I start that? I guess, you know, miracles was really good when the Sensei Divining Top was legal in Legacy. And then with that one, you can actually do the counterbalance stuff. And then, basically Miracle was like the tier one deck, and also, you know, has really a few top finishes in GP. Well, back then there was a Legacy GP, but nowadays. But anyway, yeah, so, but then the top got banned because it just makes the counterbalance combo way too strong. So people just have been thinking how to, you know, find a replacement for the Divine Top. And then one artifact that people kind of thought about just right after the banning was the Skullwrack. And so Skullwrack, just for the context, is a 2-mana artifact, just 2 generic mana. And it has activate ability. It's just 1-mana tap. You can basically select any amount of cards in your hand and put them away. And also put the same amount of cards from the top of the library to your hand. And then put the side pile back to the top of the library in any order. So it's basically like you're shuffling some of the cards from your hand to the top of the deck, and then wielding them to your hand, and then also you can put them back in any order. So in some sense, it's also like a, like if I have a counterbalance, you cast like a brainstorm, and then I can respond to the counterbalance trigger. I can just activate the score rack, put my brainstorm on top, and then counterbalance will flip the brainstorm to counter your brainstorm. So yeah, that was like the replacement for the top. But apparently it's way too worse for the counterbalance, not because it's like two mana, but also because it doesn't draw itself, and you know, you cannot just activate many, many times. So eventually.
Yes, top being able to not only activate by using no mana to draw, but also being able to protect itself, right?
Oh, yes, yes. So, yeah, so Skullrite was just nothing comparable to the top. And that's also why the Miracle people, like the counterbalance gradually just, it was still pretty good when just without the top. But then nowadays, as we can see, we have Ballmasters, we have many other things. So the counterbalance is just not good enough in the current meta. Well, besides the Delver mirrors, but not like the current best control decks are the four color beans, like Beanstalk control. And then none of them are using counterbalance. And then, so they probably use miracles, the new miracle, the Catherine, the
creature. Triumph of St. Catherine, yeah.
Yeah, so that one was pretty good. But none of this, Terminus or the Dramatic Intrigue Angels are occurring anymore. Well, I think the only person I knew who was still, you know, stick with the old school miracles are Phil.
Phil. That's it's just one guy.
Yes, yes.
He has this is actually just an episode to roast Phil.
Yeah, I mean, he has all his cards altered. I think I've seen playing on other YouTube videos a lot, and I was like,
yeah, he's always on 90s MTG playing.
Yeah, exactly. So he got, I mean, he's everything looks nice. But still, you know, we all have the same feeling that, you know, Terminus is okay, but it's not the best. So, but then if I, you know, just, the way I play Magic is just I really want to try to get this, miracle mechanism work. And then that's what makes me, like, most excited. Like, sometimes getting a good record is fine, you know, being a spy player is also good, but still the most thing I'm looking for while playing Magic is this moment where I trigger miracles. And, mostly unexpectedly. And then that just makes the whole thing dramatic. Sometimes opponents get tilted, but, you know, it's part of the game. And that's just, what makes it so interesting to me.
Yeah, I think one of the really interesting things about the current build of so you're talking about the Beans decks is that they can pivot to be a deck that also plays Terminus, but most of the time they're just on, you know, and now they're on that Beanpack Draco kind of situation, which I love. That's like right up my alley. But I think that's not like the true Miracles list, right? Like that's a deck that is leveraging a couple other things. And also it's funny because Beanstalk is a card that like doesn't really play well with Miracles because you're getting the value out of Beanstalk as your second card normally. Like you've already drawn a card by the time you cast Beanstalk, and you're certainly almost never going to want to Miracle something off of there then. And a lot of times if you're triggering it, you probably don't have a lot of mana because it's like five or more a lot of times. You probably don't have a lot of mana to get the value out of, say, like an Entreat the Angels or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And also the point for the Beanstalk control is not to trigger miracles. It's mostly to trigger the beans, right? So that's the key difference. So they build the decks to because Beanstalk is like a simple two mana drop and it replaces itself instantly. So the resources are never lost. And then later you can slowly grinding out your opponent by casting, you know, high mana cards, which, one of the removal spells happen to be more than five mana. And that just works fantastically well with the Beanstalk. And also Force of Will also works really good. So yeah, I think Beanstalk is, definitely a really awesome strategy for control. I think it's also, of course, like the actual experiments I've already tested that, you know, Beanstalk is the best control deck in the current meta. And the deck design is not to trigger miracles; it's to trigger Beanstalk. So that's the key difference.
So if you want that drama, right? If you want to be the dramatic miracles player, tell me about the deck that you're running now.
Yeah, so the deck we're running now is using Skullrock. So as we just talked before, you know, Skullrock is like kind of like Sunset's Divining Pod, but not exactly there. And it means it's way more much to make a Skullrock playable. But however, I think it was like during COVID, where I was you know, just trying to say, how can I play Scora but also make it just better? Like, if it only has synergy with Counterbalance, it's kind of weak, right? It doesn't do anything. So then there's a very famous pre-modern deck. It's called the Parfait. Yeah. Which uses Scroll Rack to work with Lantax
Scroll Rack, right?
Yeah, yeah. So then the trick is to use Lantax to grab a bunch of planes or, you know, basic lands, and then you can remove, shuffle them back to the top of the library with Scroll Rack, and then to get value from there. But Lantax is also not still playable in Legacy, which I tried. And then suddenly something clicked, which is say, what about Life from the Loam? That card is, well, it's not as the upper bound is not as good as the land text, but still it's two mana, just get three lands from the top of from the graveyard to your hand. And then if you have a Scroll Rack, you can just put the three cards back, the three lands back on the top. And then next turn, you can just draft those three cards and then do this again. So if you have those two cards set up, and you can basically do like three mana, draw three cards, and also evade Spellmasters. So that's like one direction that could make the Scroll Rack synergetic with other cards. So
that I think is one of the big things that Phil has struggled with Miracles, is living in a world where Bowmasters exists and figuring out a way to make a deck that needs to draw a card. Like you know, in order to have value out of this deck, you have to hit that draw trigger, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And make it viable.
Yeah. And then So then I'm like, okay, so Scroll Rack now works with Counterbalance, and also it works with Life from the Loam. So then my deck plan was to say, how about I make something that's between Miracle and the Four Color Loam? So Four Color Loam is also a pretty old, deck in the old meta games, where it just used Mox Diamond, etc. to just get fast mana acceleration, and then it has two drops like a library, a Dark Confidant or Loam to just get more values, and then try
back to in the win. Day we sometimes used Renin 6.
Oh yeah, well, that's also a very powerful two drops.
I really like that area. I mean I played Rug Delver at the time, but I occasionally would play the Mox Diamond version of Miracles with Renin 6, and that was kiss.
Yeah, that's good. So So then I just say how to make the four color loam merge with Miracles. So then the deck I build is basically have some of the cards are with the Miracle side, like Brainstorm, actual Miracle cards, etc. Counterbalance. And also have some cards with the four color loam side, like Sima Library or Life from the Loam or Scorak. So yeah, and then accidentally some of these things happen really well with Miracle triggers, for example. So one cool thing, my favorite thing to do is to say, if I have a miracle, like a Terminus in the graveyard, right? And I have enough, like, islands in play. So what I can do is to, dredge Loam in my, upkeep, which replaces the first draw in my turn. And then I can use the, fetch land to find the Mystic Sanctuary, and then set up the miracle from the graveyard to the top. And then I can cast Earl. And then I stack the Earl trigger such that you sacrifice yourself first and then draw the next. So Earl sacrifice itself and then draw the first draw. The draw from the Earl becomes actually the first draw of the turn. So that triggers the miracles.
Cool.
And then the Terminus just flips everything, and next turn I can just escape Earl. So there are many things like this where Loam also works really well with miracles. Just you have to be careful on, which draw to replace and then when to trigger the miracles.
And in a deck like this, you can also use Mystic Sanctuary to figure out you could have a situation where your opponent wants to get rid of your Surgical Extraction targeting your Life from the Loam, but you can put the Life from the Loam back on top of the deck before they can take it away with Mystic Sanctuary.
And also you can use Mystic Sanctuary to put any instant card back on top to enable Counterbalance. So there is there was a lot of fun interactions in the deck, which makes the deck a little very hard to play. It's really, really hard to play. Like whenever I play this deck, I have to think so much how to stack the triggers, should I dredge or not, or to dredge or not to dredge. That's just always a problem. But when you dredge Terminus, and you set up a Terminus on opponent's turn, that just makes the decks feel so good. Yeah.
Yeah. Getting, I mean, that's one of the reasons why the thinking, right? It's one of the reasons why I'm playing Beanpacked right now is because I, like, don't have to think. I don't have to do any of the calculus about how much mana I have. I'm just like, I'm going to play a 2-mana 4/4 that has every keyword and hope that's good enough.
Yeah,
with Miracles, you really have to be playing 4D chess against your opponent, really having to think, like, not just one turn ahead, but several plays ahead, and sometimes several draws ahead to figure out just how you want to do things. And a lot of that is calculating how and what your opponent is playing and knowing when is the time to blow that trigger.
Yeah, exactly. And this deck also has very interesting interaction with ball masters. So there are a few games where I just win by opponent plays two ball masters, right? And it has like a four power like a two ball masters plus the two Orcish army. So so that basically locks up all of my draw engines, like my Uro cannot work, my Teferi, you know, my Teferi bounce and the draw will also trigger their ball masters. But with Life of the Loam, you can have a loam in your graveyard and you cast Uro. And then you replace the draw with loam to not get your opponent's ballmaster triggers. And also, sometimes opponents have like ballmasters, like they have their army there. And then, but still, you can also rely on the skull rack and life on the loam to just to slowly getting card advantage. So, yeah, it's really tricky sometimes to say, like, opponents have a pretty good board state, like two ballmasters, for example, are pretty good. And then actually, their clocks are not that fast enough. And then there's still a way for you to start like getting card advantage engine running with the ballmasters on the battlefield. So there's like a very subtlety where you're like, should I focus more on the removals or should I start grinding? Because it seems like the window is pretty open for me because the cards are slow, they don't have any other interactions, and then I should just grind more. And then when you're just getting, you know, three turns, you just draw 9 cards, and that should be good enough to remove all of their stuff and have enough force to, you know, just to win the game.
So let's talk about this PDF you wrote. Like I said, it's like 65 pages. It's a lot of information. Give a quick breakdown. Why? Where did this come from? You were just like, it's all in here. I've got to get it out of my head.
So yeah, partially it's this, and also I'm like near the stage in my, so first, yeah, I'm a PhD student, so I'm near my graduation, so I'm working on my thesis. And the thesis formatting is a long article where you have to format really well. And then I was like, while formatting my thesis, why not just also format something like a nice primer, right? So there it is. Yeah, it doesn't cost extra labor. And then I just also becomes just one way where I have already collected enough game matchups. And then I have a lot of like game history logging, so I kind of want to find a place to gather all the information together for me to, you know, for reference in the later on. So that was like my motivation to put something down together, and also before I forget.
Yeah. The before I forget, I have to write everything down.
Exactly.
That's a big one. So give a quick synopsis of you know the different parts of this book.
Yeah, so the book has a few sections. I think the cover letter parts are mostly just like a very brief introduction on the list and how it performs like recently when I tried them. So I also play this deck on MTG Online on Modo a lot. And the problem with Modo is that the clock is not shared. So I have so many times where I just lose by clocking, like timing out. Yeah. It's something like, because when you have a few triggers, like all my draw needs to say, do I want to loam or not? Do I want to dredge or not? And then the miracle triggers every time I have to do the score rack. You know, this clicking is all insane. And I literally could not click fast enough to catch up the speed. And many times I already either lock opponents out because I have like one counterbalance and many, many score racks on the battlefield, or I have enough card engines, like the loam and score rack are working. So I have like a million cards in hand, but it's just say, I couldn't win fast enough in Modo, and I just like physically I cannot click fast enough to do this. So yeah, it was a little frustrating on the Modo when I just tried to play this, but it just always like extremely high pressure from the beginning. You just have to click so fast and then think so fast. And that just is hard for me to. I think it was almost a point where I stopped enjoying the game just to chase the clock.
Yeah, so, I've been there too. Tempest Draft, when they did like Tempest Remastered, that was like that for me. Either I won by getting enough mana out to cast Capsize twice in one turn, or my opponent just was like, yeah, no, let you keep clicking on stuff. You're just playing blue-white. You're eventually going to time yourself out.
Yeah, exactly. That was also part of the reason why Allure or Food Chain combos are not like as dominant on model as like a real, you know, like real card war, because this even the combos takes time to click, right? And if opponents are not nice enough to concede, they have to click, and that's just not enjoyable, not a fun experience. But yeah, so most of the records I had are just me going to some SCG events or some other just say like a large enough events where people show up, and I can, you know, do something. So that was pretty much that. And
well, the East Coast is great for that at the very least. You got a lot. There's a lot of Legacy tournaments to choose from, especially this year. There's been a lot of Legacy tournaments to choose from.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, SCG was a few. We also have the ELD. It was also in Massachusetts, so I'm based in Boston.
Oh,
so we have a very nearby game store where the owner was extremely, you know, enthusiastic on Legacy. Yeah. So back to the document. Sorry, I think I was. Yeah.
No worries. Go on.
Digress a little bit. So the rest are pretty standard as if you read any like a thesis or a book or like a primer. So I have introductions where I have some history about this miracle and the four color loan. And also I have the next chapter is about deck design, where I, you know, how do I select my mana base? How does this deck even function? Right? What's the goal of this deck? What does it try to do, and how to win the game? And then the chapter three are basically metagame analysis. Like what do you do against different decks in the metagame? Like should you be more aggressive or defensive? You know, how do you position yourself in the matchup as a control, like as a passive player? And then the rest chapters are acknowledgements and some deck showcase where I can show some of my favorite like signed cards. That was like also really good.
Well, I think, one of the things I want to say is mm-hmm. so, one, after this, we have to have you back on, because like any good PhD thesis, you're going to have to defend it. And yes. I'm not the guy to challenge it, obviously. So we're going to have you come back on with Phil, and yep. Phil's going to challenge you a little bit on it, I think.
Yeah.
An important part of the whole PhD process, if I'm not mistaken.
I think now that I'm graduating, I have enough things to say to experience about the Harvard or PhD. It's like, you know, getting a little bit more academic.
Yeah, it's really so. One of the things I guess you're hosting this online somewhere, right?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, yes,
great. So we'll have a link. We'll have a link in the description so people can check it out and read through it, because it's fascinating. Like I could probably write a good few, you know, and I can fill up a lot of space on just me being me and talking, mm-hmm. but I don't know that I could write an entire like 60 plus page book about any legacy deck that I'm currently playing, just because I don't have enough reps in with it. So the breadth of knowledge that you have to take into account that you were able to put this together is breathtaking, frankly.
I think, I just say I have so many data I've collected, and, you know, it's time to write something about this, right? So you have data, then you can do some analysis, and then you can put some conclusions. So that was naturally how this turned out. And also, I feel like, you know, nowadays when you have enough experience with some deck, you kind of develop your own perspectives, like what's your own unique understanding of the deck and how you can manipulate this one to be, you know, a little different from all of the other decks, and then like, what's your thinking in there? And that's something I think it's really nice if you can put this down somewhere so people can see it, and then people can also understand it, and then see what's the inspiration you have that maybe I might possibly can inspire them. So in this sense, this sometimes feels like actual research, you know, like playing magic feels like doing research.
Yeah, yeah, that's science right there.
Yeah, you have some you got some idea, like, okay, I have this new miracle strategy. It feels like this is working, but I'm not sure. So I'm going to start building some rough deck, right? It's like you design a very rough experiment. You take it out to your local tournament. You test it out, and then the results are probably not really good because it's just you basically just develop this, yeah. And then you start iterating, right? So what about the next version? Then the next version didn't work because this happened, and then you start iterating, and then after some maybe 1 year or 2 years, you kind of know enough about the whole card pool of the legacy, and then what's the deck can do, like what's the potential, the maximal thing you can actually do from your experience, and then you can just write them down and then share this with other people if they are also interested. So that's literally what research actually is. You know, someone had a wild idea, and then they just do some experiments and then they write this down. People feel like it's interesting.
Eternal Dirtles is proud to be sponsored by Moxfield. Moxfield is the best Magic the Gathering deck building website on the internet. You can create, share, and find decks from Commander to Legacy, and even fan-supported formats like Pre-Modern and Old School. You can see all of our decks on our Moxfield. Follow the links below to stay tuned.
So let's move from the PDF now onto the metagame. And I want to ask an honest opinion here. How do you feel like Miracles matches up, like the current version you're running, matches up against the rest of the metagame? Like, what tier would you put this deck on in comparison to the rest of the metagame?
I think this is definitely not tier one. Fair. Of course, definitely not tier one. Maybe tier two, but barely makes it. It's more like a tier three fun deck, just to play for fun.
Yeah.
And so I wouldn't say this deck is competitive, but I would say it's a functional deck. Basically, if you go to a local tournament, if you are if you know what you're doing, you can at least get a 2-2, like a 50% win rate. And then if you are lucky, and then if you are, just on top of being the expert in this deck, you can also just get some 3-1 easily. And then I've also been 4-0 a few times in my local tournament. So it's definitely a functional deck. So it's also like, if I play a tournament and I bet $10 on the tournament, I will play my deck. If I bet a car, I probably won't play my deck.
I'll play something. That's fair.
Yeah. So that's basically how much you want to take this with you. So I wouldn't describe this as a tier one or tier, like close to tier two, but I think it's has not
tier
in the
three. I think that's a fair assessment. I think that's a very fair assessment. I think Phil would probably agree with you that it's in that range. One of the things I was talking to Chicago Sal today about like content creation and like the range of success for content creation. And there's a lot of different ways to become a successful content creator. But one of them is what I call the Bryant Cook method, which is choose a deck, make that your personality, and win with it, right? And Phil's got those first two down, right? That third one's pretty elusive when you're playing Miracles, right?
Yeah, the third one, you really need you need to have your own game plan to win, to do this. I think a combo deck is the only possible way to win, if you have your own strategy. And then, I think also, Brian Cook is awesome. He inspired me to make my deck whole, like fully signed.
Oh, amazing. That's awesome. Yeah. Bryant has a lot of, tons of signed cards, and he has a particular flavor of card that he likes to go after too.
OG,
we're going to have him on in a couple of weeks. We're going to do this is sort of the fair deck week, but, in a week or two, we're going to do Storm Week. And so Bryant will flagship that week for us, talking about the Epic Storm, obviously.
Yeah. That would be awesome. Yeah. TES just so associated with Brian Cook, and he just makes he's a deck creator, and he does a lot. He always just goes with his favorite deck, and the whole deck is just beautiful, looks great on the camera. He's really, really a unique person. But anyway, still in Magic, it doesn't really matter who created this deck or who labeled this deck, right? The deck itself doesn't need to have any labels. It's just if people see this deck, they enjoy playing this, that's all it takes. You know, people enjoy getting, you know, some fun from your work, that's all it takes and all it matters.
Agreed. Yeah, I think that's my stance with content creation has always been, I just want to shout into a void, or otherwise I'm going to, you know, all these thoughts are just going to be stuck in here, and I don't want that.
Yeah.
You guys deal with these thoughts, not me. But yeah, so I think it's a great spot to stop here, and then we're, like I said, I want to have you back on when Phil's back, so mm-hmm. Phil can kind of pick your brain about the deck itself. Wenxian, it was a pleasure having you on, man. It was a blast having you on. And this, like I said, links below for the PDF. We're gonna get your deck list from you as well, so people can check out the deck list. Yeah, it was a pleasure. Pleasure having you on, man.
Yeah, thank you very much for inviting. And also, yeah, I'm so happy to be here, and I wish I can come back again. You know, talking with Phil and exchanging some awesome ideas between us. That would be awesome. Looking forward to this.
Of course. All right, everybody. Thanks for watching and have a good one. For the gift that keeps on giving all year round, join our Patreon at patreon.com/eternaldirtles. And hey, check out this playlist we got up here with all of our interviews over the last couple of years. Some great people from the Legacy community, some really great guests.